House Finance, I call this meeting to order at 3:02 p.m. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. Present today are Representative Thompson, Representative Laban, Co-Chair Foster, and I'm Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we will consider Senate Bill 203, Purple Heart Trail, Senate Bill 25, Online Checkbook, and House Bill 350, School Bond Debt Reimbursement. We're also joined by Vice Chair Ortiz. We'll begin with Senate Bill 203, Purple Heart Trail by Senator Rivak. The senator's on the floor at the moment, so his staff, Emma Torkelson, is with us. If you could place yourself on the record and begin. And we were joined by Representative Josephson at 3:02.
Thank you, Co-Chair Merrick, Co-Chair Foster, and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rivak. Since 1992, the Purple Heart Trail system of highway designations have extended across the nation, honoring servicemen and women who've been wounded or killed in service to our nation. Back in 2008, the Alaska Military Order of the Purple Heart worked with Senator Johnny Ellis to pass SB 216, which designated the highway between the Alaska-Canada border to Fairbanks as the Purple Heart Trail. Since then, signs along that stretch of the highway have stood as a thank you to our veterans and a reminder to those who passed the signs of the sacrifices made by those who serve our country. Senate Bill 203 before you extends the Purple Heart Highway or Trail Highway designation from Fairbanks down to Homer and then now on the entire Alaska Marine Highway system as well. It will now run continuously from the border with Canada down to Homer and on the 3,000 miles of AMHS ferry routes, connecting six Purple Heart cities of North Pole, Fairbanks, Wasilla, Soldotna, Homer, and Skagway, as well as the Fairbanks North Star Borough and Mat-Su Borough, who are also Purple Heart boroughs. Alaska has a strong military tradition. We have an estimated 65,000 resident veterans and approximately 21,000 active duty military. As was done in 2008, signage will draw attention along the highway. Will be placed at appropriate intervals along the highway to stimulate thought and discussion amongst adults and children alike about the history of our nation and those who've made significant sacrifices for it. I am here and available to go through a sectional analysis, and we also have Andy Mills from DOT to answer more specific questions if you have them.
Great, thank you. And Mr. Mills, do you have invited testimony or are you just here for questions? Just for questions, wonderful. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 203. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Is there anyone online? Seeing none, I'm closing public testimony on Senate Bill 203. We have two fiscal notes from the Department of Transportation, and Mr. Mills is here to go over the fiscal notes, if you would.
For the record, Andy Mills, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. For Senate Bill 203, Madam Chairwoman, we have a fiscal note that reflects what the cost would be if no donations were received. So it is paid in full with this fiscal note, and that was what we normally do with a naming designation. And we put a significant amount of detail in here just to give you an idea of what each of the different signs would cost, where some of those signs at least generally plan to be located. And as was testified by Ms. Torkelson, this is a continuation of a trail, so these signs and kiosks are actually already established from the Canadian border up to the city of Fairbanks. So this would be an extension down using the same materials that we currently have. As was also mentioned, Senate Finance did extend that on, it's 3,500, just round up a little bit more, 3,500 miles of the Alaska Marine Highway System. Again, there's a detailed breakdown, but the total fiscal note after that addition of the Alaska Marine Highway System totals 255,000, I believe is the final number. It is important to note that the text of this legislation does have within it an option for donations. And so, as such, the department would look to collect those when they're collected by the entity, the Purple Heart folks that have put this legislation forward. And we would look to take those donations and offset the UGF used for the signage that's detailed here. And then, of course, the remaining UGF would lapse back to the state. So that's how we plan to utilize that. The naming legislation hasn't passed yet, so it makes direct reference to that process in this legislation itself. If you have questions about any of the particular signs or details that are in the backup of the fiscal note, please let me know, but I'll stop there.
Great, thank you. Questions regarding the fiscal note? Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the question is for whichever of you care to answer. Is there a campaign rolling out soon, or is it waiting for this bill to pass to gather contributions from interested parties, citizens, whoever?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, we've been talking with the Military Order of the Purple Heart Alaska chapter to gauge their interest in doing that. They are ready to send out information to their members and families to ask if people want to donate. Part of the process has been gauging legislative intention on what you prefer to do. So at this point, we would, upon passage of the bill, work with that organization to let their members and people associated with them know, and then proceed from there.
Follow-up?
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So effective date of this bill is just when it passes, just no delayed. There's no regulations to write, I'm guessing.
So, and again, Andy Mills for the record, through the chair, Representative Lebon. For an effective date, of course, if there's nothing designated in here, and I don't see that, the 90-day window. And for DOT, that gives time for that third party to collect, to solicit and collect. And, of course, in the fall time, we can see what those donations are and have those materials put out there. They certainly could do sections and then do additional sections later, but I think it would be our understanding that we would, given the effective date of 90 days, look for that update from the donation from that collection and work from there.
Yes, Representative.
One last follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So is the vision to implement the signage changes next calendar year? Is that the thought right now?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, there isn't a time frame set normally on naming legislation like this. If there's a state appropriation in UGF, we produce that signage and we put it up that summer schedule that's ahead of us. That's normally how it's done. This is a bit more extensive, and there's this donation component. So I think we would want to talk to the entity that brought this forward, find out what they want for time frame, and implement that on a schedule that really makes sense for the folks that are working with the Purple Heart recipients and seeking this designation. So if they wanted to do something for this fall, we would absolutely work with them on that. If it was something for next spring or summer to give them more time, we certainly could work with that too.
Thank you, and I'd like the record to reflect at 3:04 p.m. we were joined by Representatives Carpenter, Wohl, and Rasmussen. And it looks like we do have one amendment from Representative Josephson on this bill. I'm happy to set an amendment deadline for tomorrow if other people have amendments. Otherwise, we can hear this amendment and move on with this bill. If there's comments. Representative Foster.
Yes, Madam Kutcher, if it's a simple amendment, I'd be interested in hearing it today. I'd love to move this bill today, if possible.
Thank you. Further comments? Representative Carpenter?
I'm a little concerned that the price tag here is, I would feel more comfortable if we were just using donations as opposed to state funds. And as it stands, that's not the case. We would be using state funds to be able to accept receipts at some later date if they come about. So I would feel better if we were doing it the other way around.
Okay. I can set an amendment deadline for tomorrow at noon. Does that work? Great. And we will take up Representative Josephson's amendment at that time as well. Any other comments on Senate Bill 203? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Mills and Ms. Corkison. We'll take a brief at ease. Thank you. House Finance on the record at 3:13. Next, we have Senate Bill 25, State Government Finances website by Senator Wilikowski. Again, senators are on the floor, so we have the senator's staff, David Dunsmore, with us. Welcome to House Finance. If you could place yourself on the record and begin your presentation. Thank you for being here today.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, I'm David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilikowski. And Senator Wilikowski sends his regrets that he's detained on the floor, but he greatly appreciates the Senate Finance Committee taking up this important piece of legislation to improve transparency for our state government finances in Alaska. Senator Wilikowski first introduced this bill in 2008. It didn't have enough time to make it across the finish line that year, but working with the current administration at the time, the administration developed on their own an online checkbook system. But Senator Wilikowski decided that it was important to bring this legislation forward when the online checkbook was taken offline a year or so ago, and it became clear that it was important that this requirement be put in statute for an easily accessible website for people to be able to search free of charge government transactions. And also we noticed that as technology has improved, the online checkbook that was one of the best at the time when it was originally launched has fallen behind other states. So Senator Wilikowski and working with partners in the department have crafted, and through the committee process, have crafted a bill to make the website more robust, require more disclosure, and be more easily accessible to the public. Senate Bill 25 places the online checkbook in statute and will require the website to have monthly and annual financial information available to the public and create a one-stop shop for the public to find information on revenue and expenses and provide detailed information on expenditures and revenue, including date, vendor, agency, and expense type. In 2018, Alaska received a failing grade from the U.S. Public Interest Group on their analysis of state transparency, and we have no statutory requirement to maintain an online checkbook. SB 25 will create a win-win-win for both policymakers, the public, and will allow one issue that was brought to us. It will even help vendors make more competitive bids because they'll be able to have search this already public information in a more easily transparent way. SB 25 has several advantages over the current uncodified thing, which can be taken down at any time, isn't searchable online and requires downloading and searching a PDF, doesn't include revenue and doesn't allow year-to-year comparisons, and doesn't include the University of Alaska or public corporations. SB 25 requires monthly and annual reporting. Data will be searchable online by agency, vendor, year, purpose, amount, and accounting code. It will include both revenue and expenditures, allow year-to-year comparison, and includes data from the University of Alaska and public corporations. The revenue reporting requirements, it requires reporting of receipts and deposits, proceeds from taxes. There are provisions for protecting confidential information both on the revenue and the expenditure side, and so where necessary to protect confidentiality, information can be aggregated. Agency earnings as well as other revenues. On the expenditure side, it will require a list of the names and locations of who payments are made to, the amount of expenditures, and searchable information about the types of transactions. And I will note, along with the protection for privacy, one of the changes made in the committee process was to clarify that employer wage payments will not be included in the online checkbook, Of course, for public employees, anyone watching this right now can punch into the employer directory and find out my range and staff and come up with an approximation of, get really close to knowing how much I make. But if by not having the wage information there, it's not possible to possibly suss out whether someone took family medical leave or had different withholding situations. So that wage payment itself would be aggregated. We require publishing information on the number of full-time, part-time, and temporary employees by agency, the number of independent contractors by agency, and the general fund payroll by agency. Would also put in this one-stop shop information on account balances of the statutory budget reserve, the constitutional budget reserve, the permanent fund earnings reserve account, and long-term debt by agency. And as I spoke about earlier, this would require modernization. The current site requires you to have to download an offline spreadsheet and be able to manipulate the data yourself. This is what it looks like if you download it from the current website. This is an example of another state's online checkbook, sort of some of the visualization options the Department of Administration could look at when implementing this bill. This is what Ohio has, where it's searchable by agency, expense type. They visualize the total agency spending and do allow you to download the data offline. And they allow the visualization as a check. Some other benefits of similar legislation we've found in other states. Mississippi reported that their online checkbook website saves them between $750 and $1,000 in staff time for each public records request that isn't made because people can just find the information themselves. South Carolina reported a two-thirds drop in open records requests and estimated a savings of tens of thousands of dollars. And the Texas Comptroller's Office estimated a savings of $163 million as a result of their online transparency. And I'll be happy to answer any questions from the committee or walk the committee through a sectional if you'd like.
Great, thank you. Representative Rasmussen and then LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and through the Chair, I appreciate the intention behind the bill and looking at more transparency. One thing that I'm curious about, in the prior checkbook, there were several very inaccurate expenses, I guess, listed online, and I think that led ultimately to the checkbook coming down. I'm just curious what provisions are in place, because I wouldn't want us to end up in a position where we have a checkbook posted for the public that is just blatantly full of error.
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, it's my understanding, and we can get back to the committee with a more detailed response from the Department of Administration. But in our conversations with them, it's my understanding they believe that the upgrades to the IRIS system will have alleviated those accuracy concerns. And we've also worked in to the transitional provisions of this bill, a delay of having the website launch until October 2024 to give the department time to troubleshoot any of the issues within the website.
Follow up?
Thank you, through the chair, just to follow up. Is there any way to completely remove the human element from data entry? I would imagine that we would still need data entry. I don't know if individuals go through and check line by line every single item to verify the accuracy. So I guess I'm not understanding how the upgraded IRIS system correlates to more accurate data, if you could just explain that.
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, I will speak to the department and get back to the committee in writing with more detail on that.
Thank you. I mean, one more follow-up. Sorry.
Yes, follow-up.
Through the chair, I just wanted to highlight for the record one instance that was brought to me, thankfully, from a constituent was a line item for my travel with the state, and I think it listed over $1 million in travel, which everybody around this table knows is impossible as a legislator to amass $1 million, and I'm sure my actual travel budget was under $10,000 because our office accounts are way below that. But I would be very concerned about a private business or a contractor working with the state and then having an error like that, and their reputation is then on the line because of a major error at the state. So I want to make sure that this is very vetted before I would feel comfortable requiring this in statute.
Thank you. And I would just like to recognize Representative Johnson in case I did not do that earlier. We'll go to Representative LeBon and then to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is maybe more a question to the chair. Were we going to have Department of Administration or State Treasury folks come in and tell us how they view this working and what challenges they may have in placing the system in full operation?
It looks like online we have Robert Irvine, Finance Division, Department of Administration. Mr. Irvine, are you available for questions?
Good afternoon, Chair Merrick. This is Robert from the Department of Administration.
My line
was unmuted as Representative LeBon was asking. Could he repeat his question?
Certainly. Representative LeBon, and then Mr. Irvine, if you'd place yourself on the record, that would be great. Thank you. Representative
Thank you,
LeBon.
Madam Chair. And Mr. Irvine, the question was pretty broad, and that is, are you aware of this bill? Have you considered the requirements for your department and for the State Treasury to gather and report the data? Do you have an opinion about the challenges to be compliant with the bill?
Representative LeBon, through the chair. This is Robert Irvin, Acting Division Director, Department of Administration. We have worked with the sponsor of the legislation to the best of our ability to have the bill crafted in a way that we believe is possible to implement within the timeline of the bill. The way we view the bill working for state corporations that are not using the state central accounting system is that we would provide Excel type template that they would fill out with expenditures and revenue, a crosswalk, so that their information could be uploaded into whatever this website would look like. And then if I could speak to Representative Rasmussen's comment, our goal is certainly to ensure that the data is accurate and displayed in a manner that is understandable to the public. We do not want misinformation to be out there, which is why we took the online checkbook down in 2020 and then reposted it in 21. We believe that the information that's posted now is accurate, but there is always a possibility that an error could be out there, and if it's brought to us, we will work to address it as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Follow-up? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I'm looking at your presentation, page 11, and it has just kind of a snapshot of the online checkbook. One of the things that I was wondering, and I know when you get your statement, say, from your bank, and you've made some kind of online purchase or electronic purchase, sometimes you don't even really get a full, you don't even get something as explicit as this one that says Arctic Office Products. You get something that's, you might have bought it from some named source, but you get it on your checkbook, and it's like, well, where's this charge going to come from? But I guess one of the things I was wondering is how are we going to keep up with all the data entry that this is going to require? I mean, unless you've got it dovetailed and sweeping back and forth with things that people are already putting in data entry, it's going to be a massive undertaking just to make sure everything's correct. And that, I mean, especially if you want to break out a little bit more than what you have already.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, and Mr. Irvine can correct me if I misspeak, but I believe all of this data is already being entered into the central accounting system, and he already spoke to for the agencies that don't use it. They'll be providing a spreadsheet where they can export their data from their accounting system and then send it to the Department of Administration. So I believe that all of this data is already searchable within the central accounting system, so this is that data is already being entered.
And Mr. Irvin, do you concur with that analysis?
This is Robert Irvin through the chair responding to Representative Johnson. The goal will certainly be to ensure that all of the information is entered in a way that makes sense and is understandable to the public. There will certainly need to be a training effort that is associated, that goes out to the accounting techs that are actually executing these transactions in the state central accounting system, so that people understand how much information to include for a vendor and the appropriate detail.
Representative Johnson, a follow-up?
I think I'm just going to do some offline study of this so I can completely understand what you're doing.
Thank you. Representative Wohl and then Representative Laban.
Thank you. Let's see, on this page one of the executive summary, in one of these handouts, the U.S. PERG, second paragraph. Transparency websites provide checkbook-level detail on government spending, allowing citizens and watchdog groups to view payments made to individual companies, details on purchased goods or services, and benefits obtained in exchange for public subsidies. So I agree with a lot of that, and I think having the public aware of how we spend our money is great and how much each department spends on this and that. I guess my question is, I understand transparency, but is there too much? And I guess I'm thinking of personal data and how much you mentioned. Well, already people can look up how much you make because they know your range and your step and they can extrapolate. It's not that easy to get, and I don't try to look up everyone's income, and it's not of my interest. But if something's on a website like CourtView, there's people that spend a lot of time on CourtView looking up, I don't want to call it trolling, but they look up information on everyone to see if they can find something. Is it transparent if I'm a student at UAF to know what my mathematics professor is making? Is that really, and I don't know if that's in your bill, but you did mention, you know, all state expenditures and that the university is now included. So I just wonder what the value of that is, and maybe you're not including that in this bill, but maybe you can address those issues.
Mr. Dunsmore?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, in the committee process, in the other body that had come up, and we explicitly clarified that employee wage payments would not. So, as you stated, someone can find my base salary information. They wouldn't be able to, for me or for an executive branch employee or a university employee, be able to find their specific wage payments like that. And this bill does not make any information public that is not already public. It just puts the financial information of the state that, you know, people like us already know who we can call and find out that information, but members of the public who are looking for transparency from their government won't necessarily know. We're creating a one-stop shop for them to find out this transparent information about the government.
Follow-up?
So this would create a new website with an expense of $65,000, it looked like, on the fiscal note, which and future years it's $65 every year, it looks like, for the maintenance of the website. So what you're telling me is I can't, and I know some of the information now that's available through the checkbook or whatever version we have, you can find PCN numbers, and that's not so obvious. I guess I just want to make sure that I can't type in, you know, someone's name and then pops up, you know, how much the state has paid them over a period of time. And I just, I would find that too transparent. I understand contracts, and you want to make sure that the new roof that was put on this building wasn't put on by the brother of the president of the university or something like that. Or if it was, that it was a competitive bid and not a preferential bid. Are there other areas that you're, other than giving citizens a sort of overview of state expenditures, is there some, is there any area of concern that this bill is addressing particularly?
Through the chair, Representative Wall, as we've worked with multiple offices through this process, you know, it seems, you know, every office has different issues that they've worked on where they've wanted more transparency, so we're really trying to look at an umbrella approach. There's no specific single agency we're looking at. We're wanting whichever part of the state someone needs to find the information on, we want them to be able to find it with respecting the need for protecting confidential information and at times aggregating or just not including information when it's necessary to protect information that's confidential.
Thank you. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. looking at the revenues page on the slide, and the, is it slide six? There's different types of revenue listed. Is the revenue accounting going to be at the end of each month, and it's just going to be a summary of those categories of deposits, receipts, or proceeds from taxes, sales, services, other revenues? Is that the revenue going to be added up at month end, and that's going to be the reporting?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, yes, that's going to be monthly reported, and it was in the committee process added to clarify that that monthly reporting can be unaudited so that we're not requiring monthly audits of all these agencies.
And if I may follow up, and maybe Mr. Irvine can talk about, is the revenue accounted for on a cash basis upon receipt, or is there any accrual basis accounting applied to the revenue?
Mr. Irvin?
Representative LeBon, through the chair, I would want to defer that question and respond in writing so I don't get anything wrong, if that would be okay.
Yes, and what caused me to ask that question, under other revenues, it has an interest source, lease payments. Are we waiting for the actual interest payment or lease payment before we account for it, or are we anticipating the interest payment or lease payment? So that would be the difference between cash basis and accrual basis. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll look for that response from Mr. Irvin. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Kuchar. I have a technical question. Not sure if we have the right folks. In regards to data entry, I'm wanting to know if the accounting software is a, and I assume that it is, but is it a relational database that is able to be modified or programmed such that it provides the information that we need without having to give the information to particular departments who, in an Excel spreadsheet that would then enter it into another system, link the two databases together, and make it available to the public.
Is that perhaps something Mr. Irvin can answer?
Yes. So, Representative Carpenter, if I understand your question, not every state agency uses the central accounting system known as IRIS. And so entities that are not using the central accounting system will have to provide information outside of that source. And we envision this being a spreadsheet where they can download information from their central accounting system, and then we'll upload it into Alder, our data warehouse, or if we have to do a separate data warehouse for the online checkbook database into that database. There's some development that will still need to happen. Does that answer your question?
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, partially. It gives me another question, though. How many agencies don't use our centralized database for their accounting?
There are about five or six, but I will supply that information to the committee.
The follow-up would be, along that same line, would be what is the reason that all of our departments are not using the state's centralized system for management of our accounting?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, these are separate component units of the state, things like the railroad or the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
Representative Carpenter.
So I guess what I would like to understand is what departments can fit within the framework of an automated database talking to an application that's available on the internet so that people can see, and then we can deal with each as on other things. But what is the totality? Which departments would we be able to get to, and then what would be left over to maybe find a different way to solve the problem?
Thank you. And Mr. Irvin, if you would follow up with the committee, that would be very helpful. Representative Wohl.
Yeah, thank you. Through the co-chair, Mr. Dunsmore, I guess along the lines of my first question, the granularity of the data of people that receive state money, i.e. employees, and also the granularity of people that pay into the state in the form of tax revenue, whether it's a marijuana-related business or and a lot of businesses pay their taxes directly to the state, and that's revenue, a rental car company. I'm assuming that's all confidential so that I can't look up what a business pays in taxes and then figure out how much they're making. And, you know, I'm assuming, and I'll wait for your answer, that that's private information. I guess you can see where I'm coming from. I appreciate the transparency to know where expenditures are going sort of on a macro level and what an agent, what their budget is for, you know, utilities or personnel or repairs, et cetera, and contracts with companies. I guess I just worry about confidentiality, whether it's money going out or money coming in. So like tax revenue, for example, I know I'm sure it's fairly proprietary, but protected, and that's why we don't get reports of what each oil company pays for the same reason. So can you address that issue?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wohl, I will have to double check and review the statutes to make sure there's something I'm not aware of. There are, my understanding is you're correct, generally speaking, taxpayer information is confidential. There are numerous exceptions in statute. For example, the legislature just recently passed a fisheries tax credit bill that creates an exemption for confidentiality for requiring the number of tax credits or number of recipients by fish for certain tax credits issued. I'm not aware of any of those exceptions that would require or that would not make confidential actual dollar amounts and of taxes, but I would have to review the statutes to make sure I'm being 100% accurate on that.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Kutcher. How would we address the inevitable questions that would arise from the public with access to this information? Would that be by department, or would there be a central location that people would be able to send questions or call to speak to somebody if they have questions regarding the data that they find?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I would expect the Department of Administration would put themselves as the contact for questions about the online checkbook itself. But I think you're, as far as getting information about an item from a particular agency, people are probably going to need to talk to that agency to get a better understanding.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I like the idea of having some increased accountability. I see value in this. When you collect data, there's got to be a so what as to what you do with the information that you collect. And if the public has questions, then they're either going to go to the administration of some sort, or they're going to come to each one of us to explain what they don't understand. And that's the part that, and I haven't read this thoroughly yet, so I'm not sure if it's addressed in here, but that additional workload that's going to come from the public wanting to have their questions answered, how would the bill address that? Or would it just leave it open to the administration or the legislative representative's offices to deal with the questions? Is that something that's addressed in the bill, or?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I don't believe there's anything in the bill that would specifically address that. In our research from other states, we noted that other states experience that this actually decreases an administrative burden, because since this is all information that members of the public have a right to access, but instead of having to either call a legislator's office and have their legislator track it down or call an agency directly, they would be able to, in the comfort of their own home or business, find it online in a matter of seconds.
Yes, Representative Carpenter.
Madam Kutcher, Section 4 talks about the Department of Administration shall develop, operate, and maintain a searchable internet website. I think it would be valuable for us to understand, maybe from the administration's point of view, what that might look like, since they're the ones that are tasked to do it. I don't know whether they have even thought this through yet or are in favor of it, and then maybe they could help us understand. And it goes into the other questions I was asking about, are the databases linkable and automatable? I think it would be worthwhile hearing from them.
Great. And Mr. Irvin, is that something that the Finance Division will be working on?
Yeah. So, Chair Merrick, we currently upload and maintain the state's existing online checkbook. And if I could take a minute to respond to Representative Carpenter's question, we are aware of the bill and have thought about it a little bit, which is why we've included a $250,000 capital ask in our fiscal note, which we would use to work with a contractor to develop the internet website. We currently do not have the staff capability and the programmers necessary on staff to create that kind of front-facing interactive website that I believe the bill intends.
Anything further, Representative Carpenter? Great, thank you. And with that, we're going to move to public testimony on Senate Bill 25. I'm opening public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on Senate Bill 25? Seeing none, we will move online. It looks like our first testifier is Robin Odengudenhu with the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Welcome to House Finance. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Robin O'Donoghue speaking on behalf of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, ACPIRG. ACPIRG, established in 1974, advocates on behalf of public and consumer interests. To our knowledge, we are the only non-governmental, nonprofit organization focused on addressing Alaska-specific consumer interest issues. ACPIRG supports Senate Bill 25, the Alaska Online Checkbook Act. The implementation of the Department of Administration's Alaska Online Checkbook is critical as it enables the public to better understand what their government officials are up to and how public dollars are spent. ACPIRG believes the system is close to the state government's IRS accounting system, while giving weight to matters of confidentiality would be ideal. We appreciate that the committee process has helped to improve this bill and make it even more transparent. In conclusion, we especially believe that this bill is timely and urgent to create the online checkbook in order for Alaskans to know how vast amounts of federal dollars scheduled to pour into the state as part of President Biden's infrastructure plan, among other federal dollars, will be spent. Thank you for your time and your service to the people of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Donoghue. Are there questions? I see none. Thank you for your testimony today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next testifier in Saldatna with the Kenai Peninsula School District is Penny Badla. Welcome to House Finance. Please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Penny Badla, and I am a school board member for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, but I am actually speaking on my own behalf today. I was slated to testify in 350, but when I heard this, I wanted to know more about it. I am, as a taxpayer and a person, really pleased with the sponsors, all the senators and the representatives as well, and Senator Wilikowski for drafting this bill. I believe we need to have a robust, and I believe we need more disclosure and troubleshooting and something that's more secure and has more protection. And I think that the transparency for communities, whether you're on a school board or you're on a bank or you're running our state as a legislator, is extremely important. So I applaud the group for doing this, and I look forward to seeing some sort of a system that will be proprietary and confidential, but will also allow us as people who pay taxes for everything we do in the state to go forward in a positive manner. So thank you very much to all of you who've done the work on this. I appreciate you as a taxpayer. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Vadla. We have Representative Carpenter.
Hi, Penny. It's Representative Carpenter. I just want to say thanks for calling in today.
Hello?
I'm sorry. Did you hear me?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
I have no question. I was just saying thank you for calling in today. It's Representative Carpenter.
Oh, thank you, Representative Carpenter. And I want to let you know I appreciate all the work you do as our representative.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Badla. We really appreciate you taking the time to call in. And we will call on you for House Bill 350 as well. Is there anyone else in the room or online wishing to testify on Senate Bill 25? Seeing none, I'm closing public testimony. And with that, I'm going to hold off on setting an amendment deadline until we get some of the answers that we were looking for to the committee. So thank you, Mr. Vinsmore and Mr. Irvin, for being with us, and we'll look forward to that information. Next, we're going to take up House Bill 350, School Bond Debt Reimbursement, by Representative Drummond. This is the bill's second hearing. We last heard the bill on April 27th. Representative Drummond, do you have any comments before public testimony? I think that's fine. We can move right to public testimony. Is it? And I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 350. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online? I will go to Ms. Vadla. Penny, are you available for House Bill 350, school bond debt reimbursement?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Ms. Merrick. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Just place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Penny Vadla, and I am a school board representative. I've been on the board for 14 years. I appreciate all you do, and I'm part of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education. I come from the Kenai Peninsula, and I support House Bill 350. The Kenai, you know, is very large, it's very diverse, and it's a district of 42 schools and 17 communities, over 26,000 square miles. You probably heard that from all of us. Please know that we have a variety of schools as well. Our maintenance department continues to maintain and repair our buildings. We've done a good job, a decent job over the years. However, it is impossible to complete all the large repairs and potential rebuilds with such a wide variety of schools, not only in the Central Peninsula, but also in outlying areas, both on the road system and the several remote areas that we have across the bay or out at the end of the bay. And so we need the support from the bill. House Bill 350, the bond debt reimbursement, is one such bill that supports systems and should be continued. It supports systems not only in our district, but across the whole state. And I would hope that this House Bill 350 bond debt reimbursement would have a 60% reimbursement for repairs or 70% for rebuilds. The cost shifting impacts communities and schools by interrupting and halting services, programs, and other support services that we provide for all of our communities. Because we are such a large, diverse district, it is difficult to get small bonds for only one community. We're not like larger municipalities that have a broad base of constituents in their city to support the schools in the area. Rather, we are spread out, and so it can be very difficult to get the support of one bond for one school. I think we, as a district, and I know we are, will use a bond that has multi-purposes and multi-facets so we can address the issues that we have in our school district. Please know we need to support all of our schools in all of our state. I believe that. For years, we have maintained our own buildings for the best of our ability. It has been difficult to stay ahead of these repairs without support from the state. We have had support from the present administration, President Biden, and all the people that have come together on both sides to work to help people and to make sure that the state fulfills its obligation. If we intend to continue to provide a quality education for our students in buildings that are safe, suitable, and show the students we care about them, we'll need the support of a bond debt reimbursement program in order to keep our schools well-maintained and suitable for our students. The education of our students, in my mind, I taught my whole life, I'm not going to tell you how many years, in the high school, in the college, in private places, and I believe that's our number one priority. I'm not going to go into the deferred school maintenance and all that, but I think it's really important that we do know about the deferred level of school maintenance that needs to take place to be fixed. I think I really applaud Representative Drummond and the group that worked on this for putting forth this bond issue. And I want you to know that if we put forth another bond, I want the projects to be able to be complete and to have you extend this so that we can take the moratorium off and promote the quality education where we can provide schools that are safe, but that they're nice places for kids to be. And so I would hope that you can remove this moratorium and put this bill forward to provide that education that I know, I hope I delivered, and I know our teachers and our staff and our school district personnel work hard to do every year. So thank you very much for listening to me, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you very much, Ms. Badla. I see no questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to testify today. Is there anyone else in the room or online wishing to testify? Seeing no one, I'm closing public testimony on House Bill 350. And with that, we're going to set this aside. There will be an amendment deadline for House Bill 350 tomorrow at noon. If you have any problems getting amendments to me by then, or if you have concerns, please let me know or my staff. Thank you, Representative Drummond. And with that, we are going to take a brief at ease. We are going to have a brief introduction to House Bill 5 before we adjourn. Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 4 p.m. We are now going to have a brief introduction of House Bill 5. Representative Tarr is here to present that bill, and her staff is with her as well. So if you could proceed, thank you for being here on short notice.
Thank you so, so much, Madam Co-Chair. Very, very grateful for the opportunity to spend just a couple minutes with you. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from District 19.
David Song, staff to Representative Tarr.
We are very much looking forward to presenting this bill to you. This will be the 16th hearing for this piece of legislation, so it's had some intense interest and review through the session and some changes through each committee that it's been through. So this is its third committee of referral. And so the committee substitute that we would like to have considered by the House Finance Committee will do three things. The first is change the time frame for testing of rape kits. This has been a multi-year effort a lot of you have been involved in. It's been a great, I think, success of our bipartisan work. We have moved from a two-year to a one-year to now this will be a six-month time limit. So generally, that's the part of the bill there haven't been any questions about. You know, people have been following that along over the last few years as we've been all working on that together. So then the second item is updating our consent definition. And what you'll notice to be different and what reflects what we characterized as a modern definition of consent. The definition that we have in statute was written in the late 70s. And so, you know, our attitudes, sort of what's considered culturally, socially acceptable, have changed since then. So these more modern consent definitions that we see being introduced and adopted across the country are very similar to what we have here. And it's reflected in Section 5 if you're looking at the U draft. And I'm not sure if you have the U draft.
Yes, we do.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So in the U draft, that's Section 5. Consent means a freely given, reversible agreement specific to the conduct at issue. In this paragraph, freely given means to agreement to cooperate in the act was positively expressed by word or action. We've been working with the Department of Law on this definition to get it right and make sure it's clearly understood. A key element of this is removing from the consent definition the use or threat of use of force. That's been problematic in terms of how our statute has been used in terms of criminal prosecution for sexual assault cases. And in fact, just when we started working on this, it should be in your bill packet, there's a public radio story where prosecutors from Nome were saying, please fix the statute because we can't prosecute sexual assaults because this statute is so ineffective. So, you know, from the practitioners themselves, a lot of support. You'll see in the packet more than 70 letters of support from Alaskans. We have support from the council, the network, Standing Together Against Rape, the Alaska Children's Alliance. They deal with the cases of child sexual abuse. The social workers, the National Association of Social Workers Alaska Chapter, Recover Alaska, those folks work with alcohol issues. So very broad support from a number of stakeholder groups. And, you know, it's because we've seen what happens with sexual assault, you know, what's happening with the ineffective statute that we have right now, and how we could change that to do a better job in our state. The third item is what you can characterize as considered the crime of rape by fraud. And this is reflected on page 1, line 13 and 14, where it's added to the crime of sexual assault in the first degree if by impersonating someone known to the person for the purpose of obtaining consent. And right now, that type of behavior is not criminalized. And so, for example, we have a number of stories that include actions like an individual lives with their partner and, you know, they're in bed, they were in bed with their partner, at some point that person left, but they were sleeping, they didn't know that. And then another person came and got in bed with them and pretended to be their partner. So right now, that would not be considered a criminal act because you would be considered having consented to that. Well, you consented to it because you thought it was your spouse or partner that got in bed with you. So it's an unfortunate circumstance. We have many, unfortunately, cases of this, and we hear about it on college campuses. There was a story that made national news on this, and Alaska, in adopting a provision like that, would be at least the 13th state to add a provision like that. So that is the third provision. It's reflected in sexual assault in the first degree for penetration, and then sexual assault in the second degree for sexual contact. What is different about this in terms of the criminal sanction is that the crime of sexual assault in the first degree, those are generally unclassified felonies. The rape by fraud for sexual penetration is a Class A felony, and then for contact, a Class B felony. And what you'll see really reflected in this legislation is removing the use of force from the consent definition, but instead adding it as an element of sexual assault in the first degree. And so it sort of creates a gradient so that if you use a weapon to commit a sexual assault, for example, that's worse than if you didn't have a weapon. And we do that a lot in our criminal sentencing statute, sort of the idea of aggravators. So what this allows for is, you know, both of these particular behaviors to be dealt with in the sections of statute where it identifies what level of crime it is, rather than being a part of the consent definition. That is, I feel like, the most abbreviated summary I could give at this time, and I hope that is succinctly and is with as much clarity describes what's in the legislation. I don't know if you'd like Mr. Song to do a sectional analysis at this time. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Not at this time. We're going to take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 4:08 p.m. And with that,
Mr. Vice Chair, do you have a motion on adopting the CS?
Madam Chair, I move that House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 5, Work Draft 32-LS006514, dated May 10th, 2022, as our working document.
We'll take a brief at ease. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 5, Work Draft 32-LS-065/U, dated May 10th, 2022, as our working document.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, the committee substitute has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Tarr, Mr. Song, for being here. We appreciate it on short notice, and we will take... hopefully get to House Bill 5 tomorrow morning's meeting. We are going to begin that meeting at 9 a.m. where we will consider Senate Bill 20, Teacher Reciprocity, and if we have time for House Bill 5 after that, we will go into further detail. So with that, at 4:09 p.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.